Good afternoon, everyone. Time for another Taco Tuesday on Q92, where we get together with registered dietitian nutritionist Amber Boyens from Madison Healthcare Services and Immunutrition right here in Madison, Minnesota. Welcome back to the airwaves, Amber.
Thanks for having me.
And today we're going to talk about, I find it a pretty exciting subject.
Good.
Inflammation.
That's right.
Yes. What could you tell us about it?
Well, we haven't talked about inflammation for a while. I think we've maybe talked about it a little bit in the past, but you hear so much about anti-inflammatory diets or inflammatory foods, or all of that language just gets tied into our health and into the wellness industry and into marketing and into what we should or shouldn't eat. So I thought maybe today we could circle back a little bit and talk about what are we even talking about when we say inflammation? What does inflammation feel like? Why are we fighting against it? What's our goal when we talk about these anti-inflammatory foods and anti-inflammatory diet? So first of all, what is inflammation, right?
Good question. Good starting point.
Yeah, I think so. Well, inflammation is not always bad. We'll start there. Inflammation is our body's response to something. It could be an injury, an infection, stress, whatever's going on. Inflammation is how our body responds. So if you get a paper cut and your paper cut gets red, that's inflammation. That's your body healing the cut that you got on your finger. Pretty important, right? However, when we have inflammation that's more systemic or long-term, that's happening inside our body where we can't really see it, we can't really feel each specific little piece of that inflammation, that's where we start to run into trouble. So a good analogy I've seen before is to think of inflammation like a fire alarm. Fire alarms are pretty important, right? When there's a fire, if there's something that needs to be dealt with, we want to hear that fire alarm. But if you're working in a building where the system is malfunctioning and that fire alarm is just going off nonstop, it's no longer helpful. And now it's become stressful. It's become harmful. It's ruining the environment that you're trying to exist in. So we need it. We aren't trying to get rid of inflammation. We are trying to make inflammation more efficient and more effective. So what we're trying to get rid of is that long-term, chronic inflammation. So that type of inflammation is linked with things like heart disease and diabetes and certain types of cancers, kidney disease, a lot of those chronic diseases, things that last for years, things that take years to develop often, and then last for a good chunk of our life. So in order for us to talk about how we can kind of reduce our risk of those things, looking at that inflammation that leads up to it, it really is important. Now, some people say, well, can you just test me for inflammation? Can we just see what my inflammation looks like? Well, not really. We do have some tests that can tell us there's certain inflammatory markers. When you read a research study that says inflammation is reduced by whatever they were studying or isn't reduced by or is increased by, they might be looking at different inflammatory markers, but we don't often test those in standard clinic labs because they're sometimes a little more specific than what we need. Sometimes they don't have a good range as far as knowing exactly where we want someone to sit. But a lot of people probably have had some inflammatory markers tested before. One you might see on your labs is something called CRP or C-reactive protein, or another one, high sensitivity CRP, which is something we often look at with heart disease risk. But the thing about those CRP labs is they can tell us inflammation is higher. They don't necessarily tell us where that inflammation is coming from. Is it coming from an infection, from heart risk, from an autoimmune disease, from something temporary? It doesn't give us that answer. It's just kind of general. But we can look at patterns and generally know if somebody has a lot of inflammation or not a lot of inflammation. It's not a perfect science by any means. Again, sometimes that inflammation and the effects of it take years or decades to develop. So sometimes those symptoms come on really slowly and we don't even notice it until we're in our 40s or 50s or 60s.
Or 70s.
Or 70s when those things start to present themselves. There was actually a study that came out that said ages 36 to 46 are the most impactful for when you can make changes. Now, we'll see studies that say your 20s are the most important. We'll see other studies that say there is no time that it's too late to make change. And I would say it's never the wrong time to look at our patterns in reducing inflammation. Now, when we talk about those anti-inflammatory diets, because diet is one of the things that can impact our inflammation. Now, other things that impact it are our movement, our sleep, our other behaviors like smoking can drastically increase systemic inflammation in our body. But diet is one of the things that we can control, at least to some extent. And again, it's not a magic pill. It's not a magic supplement. It's not one specific smoothie that you can do every single day that's going to keep you from having diabetes or heart disease or long-term inflammation. We often think about joint pain. Is that inflammation too? And it certainly is another piece of it. That's one that we can feel kind of come and go as we make some of our changes.
Tell me about it.
And there are certain foods that are more impactful for certain types of inflammation. But generally speaking, when we talk about that anti-inflammatory diet, we talk about things that are rich in fiber, that are rich in color, that are contain good quality sources of lean proteins like chicken and fish, especially our fatty fish. So it's the stuff that we talk about every single week here that really is an anti-inflammatory diet. It's eating a variety of foods. It's eating mostly real food, trying to decrease our intake of processed foods and things like that. Now, that doesn't mean that having a can of pop is going to cause systemic inflammation and problems forever. It's not. It's what a typical day of our diet looks like. And then when we look at social media, it gets even more confusing because you'll see things like, well, yes, eat a diet that reduces our processed foods, but don't have those big salads because they have too many calories. Or don't eat tomatoes and peppers because they have nightshades. Or don't eat peanuts because they have phytic acid. Or don't eat beans because they have lectins. So you see all of these rules that start getting put on there. And really, when we talk about certain conditions like fibromyalgia or certain types of arthritis or certain types of heart disease or things like that, certainly there are therapeutic diets that can be helpful where we try to cut out certain things. But for the average person, the average person does not need to skip beans. The average person does not need to skip peanuts, tomatoes, other nightshade vegetables like potatoes and bell peppers. They don't need to skip salads. So before we start to do all these therapeutic things where we eliminate foods because we saw something online or read an article that talked about lectins or phytic acid or nightshades or whatever it might be, we just want to look at the totality of our patterns. What does typical look like? On a typical day, am I eating lots of fruits and vegetables? Am I getting good quality sources of protein? Am I drinking water? Am I moving my body? Am I getting good sleep? Before we start adding in a bunch of supplements or pulling out a bunch of anti-nutrients is what they're sometimes called, let's just look at those foundations. Easy, right?
Nothing to it.
I know it's not easy.
Or you can go online and find yourself a chart.
You can find a chart.
I just found that, Jared. It says foods that cause inflammation, processed cheese, processed meat, packaged snacks, sugary drinks, sweets, and fried foods.
Yes.
And you should switch that out with fresh fruits, fresh vegetables, fatty fish, healthy oils, lean protein, legumes, nuts and seeds, spices, and whole grains.
You got it.
There you go. That doesn't sound too bad.
It doesn't sound too bad. And nourishing food can be flavorful. And it doesn't mean that every single thing you eat needs to come from that anti-inflammatory section, right?
Right.
It's that most of the food that we eat should come from that. I love donuts. I love all sorts of things that are not nourishing. And a good hamburger, absolutely. These things are not necessarily bad for us when they are part of a whole balanced diet. I often tell people, if you go and you get fast food and that's your meal, if we can even just add some vegetables to it or have some fruit alongside it, that right there just made that meal more nourishing. It provided your body something healthy. And when we think about the fact that only 5-7% of Americans meet fiber goals, anything you can do to sneak that fiber in is going to be good. 70% of our immune system lives in the gut. So if we feed the gut, we get that fiber, we get those nutrients that our gut needs.
You got a bigger gut to feed every day.
Inflammation is going to be more managed.
I got to manage something there.
Well, we can work on that.
Yeah. I'll be continuing my rigorous exercise routine that I usually do.
Tell us about that.
I'm writing a book. It'll be coming
out. Oh, sometime. We can't wait. No. Pins and needles.
There you go. All right. If you have any questions on inflammation and inflammation, inflammatory foods, or anything dealing with nutrition, you're here to help.
I sure am. You can find me online at imunutrition.com. That's I-M-U, nutrition.com, on Facebook at imunutrition, or you can call up to the clinic here in Madison, 598-7551, and schedule an appointment.
All right, and we'll see you again next week for another Taco Tuesday.
Sounds great. Thank you.